The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google. What makes them industry giants? Get ready to take a peek inside and learn their secrets of success. This is Silicon Valley Insider, the show that demystifies the Valley and helps to elevate your business to the next level. Now, your host for Silicon Valley Insider, Keith Koo.
Welcome to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo, and I'm really excited about today's show. As guests, I have Sean O'Kelly, former Chief Information Officer for Financial and Professional Regulation for the state of Illinois, as well as Randy Kowalski, former Deputy Director of Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology for the state of Illinois, who will be talking about smart state initiatives. So don't go away. So in this week's tech news, more in artificial intelligence headlines is that researchers in Australia have discovered a potentially better flu vaccine using a program called SAM. And so if we recall the flu vaccine every year, it's a cocktail of what doctors around the world think will be the most likely strains. The hypothesis is that artificial intelligence can be a better predictor so that the flu vaccine can be more effective. In other AI news, a consortium of tech firms, which include Google, Intel, Microsoft, and universities like Harvard, are trying to set AI benchmarks. There's over 2,500 organizations that are involved with different types of AI, and this is a group trying to create a standard so that they can all use as a reference. U.S. retailers are joining together to file an antitrust lawsuit against companies like Amazon and Google, claiming that the Silicon Valley companies, even though Amazon's in Seattle, that they unfairly have an advantage over these traditional smaller entities because they can actually see all the data involved with all these other storefronts. So the argument is that millions of jobs, 100,000 manufacturing centers, and again, up to $1.5 trillion are at stake, and that's why they have filed this suit. The head of BIS, or the Bank of International Settlements, has done a U-turn on digital currencies or cryptocurrencies. For a long time, they were saying that there was no real useful reason to have cryptocurrencies. And now they're saying that they're actually embracing it and believe that there's digital fiat currencies that will be coming out. And it's very interesting that with this U-turn, they also made it very clear that they're anti, quote-unquote, cryptocurrencies like Libra, which we just talked about last week. It's Facebook's foray into cryptocurrencies. In a study by Deloitte Consulting, they did a poll on how enterprise executives look at blockchain as a technology. And the interesting fact here is that 73% of all Chinese enterprise execs see it as a strategic weapon, that they actually have to adopt blockchain in order for their company to be competitive. And this compares to 56% of American executives having the same feeling. And finally, as we reported last week, more municipalities are being hit with ransomware. Lake City, Florida is the latest, and they actually did pay a Bitcoin ransom. And also the court systems of Georgia are also now hit. I'm not sure if they're paying the ransom yet, but this goes off of last year's Atlanta ransomware attack. So I'll be talking more about ransomware in CyberTip later on the show. And that's the tech news of the week. Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, I'm joined with Sean O'Kelly, who's the former Chief Information Officer of Financial and Professional Regulation, and Randy Kowalski, the former Deputy Director, Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology for the state of Illinois. Welcome, guys.
Good afternoon, Keith.
Sean and Randy, I'm really excited to have you guys on the show today. I've done a lot recently in the smart city space, and now we're talking about smart state. You two were instrumental in drafting the state of Illinois' smart state initiative. So I wanted to talk about what that experience was like.
Good afternoon. I'm Sean O'Kelly. As you mentioned, I'm the former chief information officer for financial and professional regulation. In terms of my role, the thing to keep in mind is that every state packages its departments a little bit differently. And so I had responsibility for kind of classic, you know, infrastructure, security, compliance, and applications. But in terms of this particular regulatory department, the state of Illinois packaged financial regulation and professional regulation together, which not every state does it that way. But what makes this, I think this department particularly interesting is it ends up meaning from an IT perspective that you have to port a couple different business models. For financial regulation, the department was responsible for regulating all banks, credit unions, currency exchanges, money transmitters, consumer credit outfits, title insurance. And so from an IT perspective, that's actually essentially supporting a B2B business model. And so from a professional regulation perspective, the department issues all the licenses for any kind of professional licensing in the state. And there's something like 250 or 260 different license types.
Wow.
But that's anything from a doctor, nurse, engineer, accountant, real estate agent, so on and so forth. And so in essence, between banking and professional licensing, the department in one form or another touches nearly every citizen in the state. But from an IT perspective, that means we have to support, in that case, for professional regulation, a B2C model in terms of the licenses that are issued. The agency doesn't, and this is public information, the agency doesn't run off of tax dollars. It runs entirely off of the license fees that it collects. Mm-hmm. So IT is responsible for about 70 to 80% of the revenue that the agency takes in. So what that means is we get involved in quite a number of conversations that involve smart state, emerging technology, as well as modernization, digitization, generally upgrading our technology. Hopefully it gives you a little bit of a sense of what the agency does.
Yeah, thanks. And then Randy, how would you dovetail that with the experience you bring?
Sure. Thank you, Keith. We've got just for a little bit of my background here, that might give you some context. I spent 25 years in finance on Wall Street in the institutional fixed income and derivatives markets with Morgan Stanley and HSBC. This sector has experienced huge disruption and transformation by technology over the last 20 years. So I'm familiar with disruption and technology. In order to get back, I decided to join Governor Rauner's administration and they suggested I go under the Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology Office. So with that office, what we did is really everything is from a business development and an economic perspective. We promote, coordinate, network, stimulate technology, innovation, and even small businesses through various government means. So basically, here's what we did. Okay, we ran some technology grants. We ran technology angel tax and incentives for the state, which is a very interesting program, ran small business development centers. And a lot of what I did was to connect the various innovation and technology sectors in Illinois, which is massive, together to form networks and collaborations with our two national labs, Fermi and Argonne, along with all the universities, UFC, UIC, Northwestern, and various other ones, plus all of our innovation network around the state. You know, we have almost a $1 trillion economy here in Illinois. So my point was, and my idea here, is to marshal a lot of those resources to point them toward innovation.
Sean and Randy, thank you so much for the introduction. When we get back, I'm going to want to jump into the work you both did on the Smart State Initiative. So you're listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo, joined with Sean O'Kelly and Randy Kowalski, former IT executives of the state of Illinois. Any questions or comments about today's show, email us at info@svi.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888- 888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Hey, Insiders, welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. Once again, joined with Sean O'Kelly and Randy Kowalski, former IT executives for the state of Illinois. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks for having us.
So for this week's question, I wanted to ask, what was working on Illinois' smart state strategies like, and what were the things that came out of that?
Well, that's a great question, Keith. Let me start out with saying that in 2016, our former CIO of Illinois, Hardik Bhatt, he was actually a former Cisco and Chicago IT executive. What he did is he initiated the Smarter State initiative. So what that was, it was basically formed out of some white papers that were commissioned by him. And it was really, to define what it was really a smarter government initiative. Basically, he focused in on, Sean will get into this, but he focused in on integrating various platforms, which were hundreds in Illinois, legacy platforms. And so that was an internal, our internal projects, along with some ERP. The external projects, he did do some customer-facing, citizen-facing projects, for instance, educational and some platforms for customer engagement along some of the in DCEO and some CRM projects. But what we did, okay, after Hardik Bhatt left in 2017, what we did is we actually, Nick Cosentino and myself at DoIt, we actually expanded what a smarter state is, because a smarter government is really just one facet of a smart state. We actually came up, we worked over a year on this strategy, and we actually came up with five buckets for a smarter state. And let me give you these, okay? And
sure.
Because we had to do this in order to get your hands around this massive technology transformation that's happening organically from the top up, top down, everywhere, we had to define the sector. So we defined infrastructure and energy. We defined a sector, the data sector, mobility, health, welfare, safety and security, and then also e-government, which is really basically smarter government.
Mm-hmm.
So those five buckets overlap. They also some of the projects might be peculiar to each sector, but most of them overlap. As you can see, data would tie them all together. So and this what this does is give us a bite-sized piece when we go to form our strategy and to evaluate timelines for implementation of projects.
Well, thanks. That sounds very synonymous with what any enterprise organization also has to go through. So I thank you for the explanation. Sean and Randy, with all the buckets that Randy was just describing on the Smarter State Initiative, what is it like to have to juggle all that?
This is Sean again. I came into government after 20 years in the private sector, former Accenture and Deloitte person, and one of my key sort of areas of focus prior to coming into government was in customer experience. And so in two of the areas that Randy mentioned, eGov and data, he's absolutely right. There's so much overlap there between those two. But in essence, in the private sector, what people refer to as customer experience, you could think of, from the government perspective, the extension of that really is the citizen experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my department, that's where we spent a lot of our time. I think where they will probably need to continue spending a lot of their time. And the reason is because, and when I say citizen experience, I mean that in its broadest sense, not just individuals, but I mean businesses that are regulated entities of the government as well. But I'm saying that and using that term in its broadest sense. The idea with citizen experience is that irrespective of whether or not it's a B2B interaction where you have certain ways that you require regulatory compliance or the B2C interaction, you want to get to a place where you're leveraging technology and data so that you're starting to get away from that form-based manual interaction, have to go to a facility kind of thing, having to provide a lot of supporting documents, and get to a place where, in theory, more of that is done electronically. But of course, in order to do that, you have to have the right, the right technology stack in place in order to facilitate those interactions. But the larger theme I would like to just, communicate here is that I think as time goes on, government, particularly state and local government, is going to continue to receive a lot of demand. I think there's already a lot of demand, but I think it's going to grow to interact and play in larger ecosystems. And so what does that mean? Up until now, I mean, I think the government has had has statutory responsibility to keep data secure, keep it protected, and that's still true. And the state certainly focuses quite a bit on that. As regulated entities and regulated individuals or citizens have to interact with government, they're going to want. I think that expectation is there that they're going to want to interact in more modern ways.
Yep.
So in terms of the citizen experience, one example of that, a specific example, is when I walked in the door 2 years ago at the state, license applications were literally done on paper still. So if you were a doctor in the state of Illinois, or if you were finishing medical school and you're now applying for your license, you had to go to our website, download a piece of paper, fill it out, and mail it in. That was just 2 years ago. In the time that I've been there, one of the things that we did was we got 85% of those license applications online.
How did you actually accomplish that? What's the way to make that more efficient, as an example?
I mean, there's a couple different things, but I think you really have to tackle it from two perspectives. One is you have to have right financial systems in place, and then you have to have the right customer experience front end in place.
Right.
What we did is last summer is we completed our implementation of SAP, an adoption of SAP for financials. Our department had something like 5 to 6 to 7 different accounting tools that were being used, and so you consolidate that so you can properly account for all the revenue coming in. And then on the customer experience side, you really need to map out what that customer journey is, as well as follow the data through. And we did those things, and we got those things accomplished so that it reduced the processing time that it took for an individual to apply for a professional license in Illinois by something like, I think we calculated somewhere around 20%.
Well, that's great with the 250 or so licenses that your department had to manage. When we get back, Sean and Randy, I'm going to want to talk about all the technologies coming out that states and local governments are looking at, are adopting. So thanks again for being here. You're listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. Any questions or comments about today's show, email us at info@svn.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo. Today on the show, I'm joined with the former Chief Information Officer of Financial and Professional Regulation, Sean O'Kelly, as well as the former Deputy Director of Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology for the state of Illinois, Randy Kowalski. For this week's Cyber Tip, I'm going to continue on for what I said in tech news, which is ransomware attacks are increasing, especially with local and state government. But even so, it's all organizations. The reason why state and local governments are being attacked is because they're seen as a very high value target with all the data they have. They've been paying out the ransoms. At the same time, they don't spend nearly the same amount of money that corporations pay to protect themselves. So for instance, JP Morgan last year spent $600 million in cybersecurity. So here are some tips, whether you're a government, a municipality, or whether you are a business owner or enterprise customer, these are all things that you should be thinking about. Tip number one, always control your email. A lot of vectors come in through what's called a phishing attack or other types of trying to get somebody to open an attachment, open an email. That usually starts an executable, which then leads the door wide open to stealing your information and putting in the malware. Next is protecting infrastructure. So this is the stuff that your company, your organization runs on. So many times, especially your system administrators, there are things that they can do to lock down their environment. Your system is oftentimes has all these extra things that are administrative controls that you can actually tighten down because they're just unnecessary. So open ports, things like that. Also, you should always do a proper backup and recovery as part of your planning. And we always talk about patching. We've actually done past shows on how to patch your systems. Finally, have a strong business continuity plan. And I think especially for small business owners, you think, why would I need one? It could be just as simple as what I said earlier, how to know how to back up your data, firewalled off from anything connected to the network, so that when your information gets stolen or locked down through malware, you have the ability to recover that data without having to pay the ransom. And as always, be vigilant. And that's the cyber tip of the week. Once again, welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider. I'm your host, Keith Koo, joined with Sean O'Kelly, former Chief Information Officer for Financial and Professional Regulation for the state of Illinois, as well as Randy Kowalski, former Deputy Director of Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing I'd like to get your take on is 5G, because the city of Chicago is considered, you know, the first deployment of 5G. And in terms of what the city needed to do and the state needed to do to be prepared for that, what was that like?
Chicago is the first one. Verizon has got their 5G service. They just rolled it out a few months back.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we're looking at across the state, too, just so you know, on the Smarter State Initiative, is 5G is going to need a lot of fiber in the ground. Autonomous vehicles are going to need a lot of 5G. So therefore, you're going to need a lot of fiber running along the roadways. Illinois, we uncovered a really underutilized asset in the Smarter State Initiative. It's called the Illinois Century Network, which is well over thousands of miles of fiber optic embedded in the interstates and state roads as a gift through the 2008 the big Obama stimulation project. So we're using only 4 to 5% of that Illinois Century Network along the expressways, and 5G boxes will be perfect fit because what you do is you put them on the streetlights, and then you connect them to the fiber, and then you can backhaul it into the general fiber networks. So we've got a lot of assets here that we're uncovering that we can actually do. We did an RFI for this, and I'm not sure where it stands with the new administration, but we did an RFI in order to find out ideas on how to use this immense fiber optic network that we're not using.
That's great, and that's very similar to the state of Virginia in their assets. You know, one thing I wanted to bring back, because we were talking about drones and unmanned vehicles, and then we also were thinking about how a lot of times there's cameras installed in that. San Francisco, there was big news lately that San Francisco put a ban on facial recognition used for law enforcement. I wanted to get your take on what that means when a law that comes down or an edict comes down and you've already made this technology adoption. How do local governments react to implementing that change? Because I would think that's not trivial to suddenly say, can't use any of this technology for this use case.
Well, Keith, depending on the explicit rules of what San Francisco is doing, here in Illinois, we do have a facial recognition law. It's called the Biometric Laws of 2008, I believe. And we do restrict any kind of facial recognition, including, I believe, law enforcement. And law enforcement here also is restricted in their drone use. At least this was as of a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this is where technology, fast-moving technology, hits slow-moving administrative government processes. And this will play out. It'll play out slowly as soon as data Again, the whole data privacy issue, data ownership issue is the, 2,000-pound gorilla here. And where we go with federal guidelines, which we don't have too much at all. We have some of the GDPR, but even that doesn't go far enough. So we'll see how this goes. But I know the city of Chicago, through their array of things, they have by now they have well over 200 sensors that gather five different data types around the city, and they anonymize. They go through a very thorough anonymizing process before they do any data analysis.
Well, that's really great to hear. In that, I think back to human-centered design or citizen engagement. A lot of that has to do with, as Sean had mentioned in the previous segment, that citizens want better ways of connecting to the government, more efficiency, and sometimes that has to do with giving up more personal information. So knowing that the government is enacting rules, here in California, we will have a more stringent version of GDPR that's already been passed but will be implemented in 2020. I wanted to talk about this concept called algorithmic accountability, especially in the use of artificial intelligence. All these technologies that are coming down the chute, is how do people like you react, and how do you make sure that you give really the citizens the confidence that, one, the government's listening, and two, that they can actually audit or hold the government accountable for the data that they're using? And I know you started with the policies and regulations, but how do they actually review that?
Yeah, Sean may want to take this one.
Yeah, in government, you literally have to follow laws. The law allows for the collection of certain data or the sharing of certain data, then that will be facilitated through technology. Certainly, if it doesn't, then we stay away from that. But if citizens do want to know what is being collected, there is kind of like the classic FOIA process that could be followed.
Mm-hmm.
Which we did quite a bit of in our department. But in terms of algorithmic accountability, I would say, the state, we were just at the very beginnings of starting to look into how to leverage that. I don't know we're ready to start actually implementing that yet, but I think that there is that, along with any kind of emerging tech, AI, blockchain. We were just in the beginning stages of looking into how to leverage those technologies.
And I think you're right. A lot of this is new. So, Sean, I know you personally are very big in the blockchain space. What is your thought about how blockchain is going to impact state and local government?
Yeah, that one's a little more clear cut than even AI or algorithmic accountability. I mean, I think when I say clear cut, I mean it still is going to take a little bit of time for government to implement some of these solutions as they mature in the marketplace. But particularly around blockchain, the key thing is actually the two key things are going to be identity and regulatory compliance. So with regards to identity, that you can think of that in its broadest sense. That could be the identity of an individual or a business entity. It could be the identity of a property like real estate or a vehicle or a boat. Or it could be the identity of a what you could think of in the broadest sense as a unit of account, cryptocurrency, tokens, securities. Those are the kind of classic things that that identity is going to cover. But particularly with regards to government, if you can identify individuals, create that digital identity on the blockchain, now you can take another step to improve the customer experience, the citizen experience. For instance, perhaps in the future, in order to go to a portal to change your address with the government, you may not need to use an ID and a password in the future. That one possible outcome there. With regards to real estate, I think there's a lot of applications around real estate. That's also one of the things that my department regulated was real estate. And when you think about the end-to-end real estate transaction and how to identify a property and then follow that property through as it changes hands over the years, all the way through to its recording at the county level, that is one of the key uses of identity that people are looking at. But specifically around professional licensing too, an interesting one here is you mentioned GDPR earlier, which is in its broadest sense, the idea that individuals can better control their own information. So if every individual had an immutable identity on the blockchain that you can then associate any attributes about that individual to, now that individual has the ability, more ability than they do today, to control the information that they choose to share. And that could be academic credentials, for instance.
Yep.
So maybe in the future, you don't need to go to your university to request that they send your transcripts somewhere if you're applying for a job or applying for a research, opportunity or something. But you can extend that to professional licensing as well. When the government issues you a license to be able to perform a certain profession, you may not need to go to the government to actually have them validate that license was issued to you, that it's already been validated, it's already associated with your identity on the blockchain, and now all you need to do is choose to share it.
Sean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think identity is going to be huge and something that's really important in both use cases for organizations and individuals. And Randy and Sean, we're out of time on this segment, so I'm going to have you guys come back. So thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
So don't go away, because we're going to have Randy and Sean back for the pivot as we talk about how governments could adapt to change. So you're listening to the Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. Any questions or comments, email us at info@svn.biz, and we'll be right back.
For questions or comments on today's program, call 1-888-828-7846. That's 888-828-SVIN. Now, back to Silicon Valley Insider. Once again, your host, Keith Koo.
Hey, Insiders. Welcome back to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. Today, I've been joined with Sean O'Kelly, former Chief Information Officer for Financial and Professional Regulation for the State of Illinois, and Randy Kowalski, former Deputy Director of Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology, also for the State of Illinois. Welcome again.
Thank you. Thanks.
And we're now in the final part of the show, which is the pivot. And I think a perfect thing that we've been talking about through all of today's show is really how governments are adapting to technology and change, and especially with the rate of innovation that's happening all over globally. And I know you two have a lot of opinions. What do you think cities should be doing to keep up with that rate of change and to evaluate and adopt those technologies?
So, Keith, just a couple thoughts from my perspective. I really think as the demand grows for governments to participate in larger ecosystems, which, like I said earlier, may include the regulated entities that they're responsible for, as well as providing the right citizen-facing portals, I really think that there needs to be focus on upgrading the technology stack. And so while, again, a lot of the focus has been on security, and rightfully so, getting to a place where you have well-organized, clean data, I think is got to be one of the focuses. Modern portals, modern CRMs, modern middleware to open up APIs so that the government can interact in these larger ecosystems that allow it to capture information, share information, and ultimately get to a place where you can automate more of the interactions that others really want. And that could be interactions with other state agencies within the state, other agencies within the federal government, agencies and in local government, as well as industry associations and agencies and regulated entities.
So, Sean, you have experience with both the private and the public sector, so what you're saying makes a lot of sense. But what kind of obstacles might come up for executives in your position with local government, and then how do you overcome those obstacles to make these changes happen?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And look, I mean, to be totally fair, government has really, really hard choices. The elected leaders have really, really difficult choices when they have to go through and prioritize and budget what is going to get funded and what takes priority. So, when they have to choose between a program that maybe helps kids or an IT project, those are really, really hard choices. But ultimately, I think the biggest thing is just trying to tell the story. You have to make sure that you're working with your appointed and elected leaders to demonstrate the priority of how this can help citizens, how it can help the government itself. And ultimately, you know, projects have to get funded. That's where it starts.
Thanks.
Yes. And if, Keith, if I could, just elaborate on this.
Sure, Andy.
One of the things that we've seen here traveling around the state of Illinois for 4 years is that, the key to technology implementation is communication, it's network, it's collaboration, and mostly education. Government is not an early adopter. It's a late adopter at all, if you know what I mean. And it's technology for a lot of people is just a tool. It's just a means to an end. It's not like we're talking a bunch of technologists for the love of technology. So if you identify what's going on, what you need to do is you need to educate the government administrators who are risk averse and for good reason, and to give them a safe space in order to learn about the technology through third parties, through in a safe space for vendors to tell them without going down to the sales pitch, to collaborate with other nearby communities to see what they're doing, and to potentially go through some cost savings plans and team up with regions also and states. So really, it's a matter of education. So what we did is we created the Illinois Smart City and Region Association, and we're a 501c3 nonprofit educational, and we are teaching Illinois municipalities from cities, towns, counties, states about everything in these five stacks we just told you. And we're also teaching them how to write a technology strategy, a smarter strategy, and also best practices in the technology as it stands now. So all this is just trying to keep up with the massive information flow that's coming through in this digital transformation we're living through. So, like I said, it starts with education, and then we help them with strategizing, planning, and implementation.
Well, Randy, that sounds like a very worthwhile nonprofit that you're working with, and I once again want to thank you and Sean O'Kelly for being on the show today. It's gone by quick, so thanks again. You're listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo, joined with Sean O'Kelly, former Chief Information Officer of Financial and Professional Regulation, and Randy Kowalski, who's the former Deputy Director of Entrepreneurship, Innovation, and Technology. Both Sean and Randy are open to connections on LinkedIn, so you can find Sean at Sean T. O'Kelly, and you can find Randy at Randy Kowalski, K-O-W-A-L-S-K-I. Any questions or comments on today's show, email us at info@svn.biz. See you next week.
You've been listening to Silicon Valley Insider with Keith Koo. For questions or comments on today's program, or to schedule a complimentary consultation with Keith about your business, call 1-888-828-SVIN. That's 1-888-828-7846. 888-828-SVIN.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.